have tea in here.
Good evening, everyone. So, how are you cooking your life? Or is life cooking you? Sometimes both happen, right? We get cooked. And sometimes we cook. But, you know, the cook metaphor, of course, only goes so far because usually there's an end to the cooking. The rice finishes, the vegetables are done, the meat is ready to serve. But in our life, the cooking doesn't end until it all ends. We never finish cooking our life. And what does it mean to cook our life? This is what Dogen is, I think, trying to tell us in this text. What does it mean to cook our life? When I first looked at this text, I thought, this is a really strange topic for a religious text. And I've never come across another kind of religious or spiritual text that places such a high value on the practice and the role of the cook. Indeed, that's only in Zen, as far as I know. Even the other Buddhist traditions don't really talk much about the value of cooking as a kind of religious practice. And actually, that was also true in Dogen's time in Japan at the monasteries when he trained before going to China. As Kate mentioned last week, Buddhism, or rather Zen, really got established in Japan around the 12th century, around the Dogen, around the time Dogen lived, or just a little bit before. And most monasteries at that time reflected society, exactly the way society was. So if you were a noble person or a person who had belonged to a rather wealthy family and you entered the temple or the monastery, you didn't cook. You were involved probably in the administration or, you know, doing some kind of ritual practice. And the people who entered the monastery who were from the lower classes, they were the people who did the labor. Cleaned the monastery and, you know, did the cooking. Now they were the workers. There was a clear division of work. And yet after his experience in China, Dogen came to see the importance of work. And when he returned from China, he really strove to establish his own training place where all of those who arose, the Bodhi mind, the Bodhisattva mind, would practice together, doing all the jobs, not just for the sake of fostering some sense of equality, but to really deepen this sense of the Bodhi mind, or in Sanskrit, the Bodhicitta, the awakening heart-mind, the awakening mind. At the beginning of the text, Dogen wrote, "The work or the running of the monastery has always been carried out by teachers settled in the way and by others who have aroused the bodhisattva spirit within themselves. Work is an expression of who we are, or it can be. It can be an expression of our deepest way-seeking mind." So, it's interesting, you know, just thinking, why do we say work? Work seems opposite to play. Work is something separate from the rest of our life. I think when we look at this text, Dogen is trying to wake us up from that conception. Work is not something separate. It's just our life. It's just our life. Work is practice just as the Zazen is practice. Work is our life just as Zazen is our life. I was struck by this particularly last week when we were reading the story of separating sand from rice. Or is it rice from sand? Dogen's kind of like, you know, poking at us a little bit. One is work and one is not. Can we take care of both the rice and the sand? There's a famous story of a true story, a recent story of a young man who wanted to become a priest, who wanted to join the Zen monastery. It's a small temple in Kyoto. And he goes to the temple, and the person there says, you probably wouldn't work out. But he stays and kind of pesters, and finally the head of the temple, the teacher there, says, okay, we'll clean the garden, and we'll see. So the young guy goes out industriously, and he sweeps up all the garbage in the garden, the dead leaves, the twigs, the rocks, and he makes a big pile, and he goes into the teacher and says, where should I throw the garbage? And the teacher looks at him and roars, there's no garbage. And he stomps out, and he looks at the pile, and he says, those twigs, we need them for the fire. I mean, in the kitchen. Those leaves, those will we use to start the fire. Separate them out. And so the young man separates out the twigs and the leaves and then piles, and what's left is a bunch of, you know, kind of stones and pebbles that were left. He says, okay, where do I throw these? And the teacher roars at him, that's not garbage either. And the teacher picks up all the pebbles and he goes to where the tiles, where the drip line is, the tiles of the roof, and he carefully places all the stones and tamps them down where the holes have started to form in the ground where the rain drips off the tiles. No garbage. Everything's used. I was thinking of that yesterday, or the day before, washing the dirt off the lettuce, thinking, that's the dirt, this is the lettuce. I want this, I don't want that. How easy it is to fall into those views. And of course those are useful, right? We don't want to eat the dirt. And yet, how do we treat the dirt? You know, do we take it outside and put it back, or do we let it go down the drain? So I think in our practice, Zazen, and in the text, you know, we come to see the oneness of things. In our work, we reveal that oneness. And we see, but at the same time, we see deeply into the uniqueness of each thing. And this, I think, is the core of the text. Yes, the Zen teaching of oneness. And at the same time, each thing is unique. How do we treat it? How do we give it full life? How do we give ourselves full life as unique beings here? Discrimination is also part of our reality. So Dogen, in the text, I think, is teaching us, using the example of the cook, how to approach this, the kind of attitude, perhaps, to have. The way that we can unfold our work, what we call work, and make it part of our life. How we cook that too into this life of ours. So last week, I think we finished on page 6, where Dogen, is that right? Mm-hmm. The very top there, so. Dogen has just told the cook, after the morning meal is prepared, then you clean everything up. Clean the chopsticks, the ladles, all the utensils, handle them with equal care and awareness. Putting everything back where it naturally belongs. Keeping your mind on your work. Do not throw things around carelessly. how often it is when we're nearing the end of work, we don't think of our work, do we? We think of the tea or coffee to come. Can I get up 5 minutes early? And Dogen's cautioning us, no, be there 100%, right till the end. Drink it to the very bottom. So let's do what we did last week and kind of read a couple of paragraphs. And then I'll maybe pause and make a few comments and we'll go around like that. So do you want to read the next couple of paragraphs there for us, please?
After this work has been done, it is time to prepare for the following day's noon meal. First of all, check to see whether there are any insects, peas, rice bran, or tiny stones in the rice, and if so, carefully winnow them out. When choosing the rice and vegetables to use, those working under the tent should offer nutritious materials to the pot. Then begin preparing the ingredients for whatever side dish or soup that might be, cleaning everything thoroughly and making dirt drink. Never complain about its quality or quantity, but always handle everything with the greatest care and attention. Nothing could be worse than to complain about too much or something or of inferior quality.
Good. Let's pause there for a moment. Kamado is a stove, a wood-burning stove, usually kind of built of mud or bricks, and with fire going in, wood fire. And often there would be like three or four fires going in these different places, and so you're cooking like three or four things at the same time. I've never cooked on one of these or with fire, unlike Kate. Perhaps some of you have experienced that, but I hear it's very challenging.
Not a Kamado,
but a wood stove.
But I've baked a lot on a wood stove.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems pretty obvious, right? You're careful. Preparation, start to cook. But and then in the last paragraph there, you receive food from the kusu. Kusu is a kind of person in charge of the affairs of the monastery, the general manager. So you would go and you'd get, you know, the food that you would use. I guess from the storage, they would decide, you know, how much food you're going to get and what to get. And interesting, he says, never complain about its quality or quantity. Always handle everything with the greatest care and attention. Free of judging mind. This is what life is giving me. Now what do I do? How do I use this? But I'm sure some judgment will naturally arise, right? You look pretty withered. Tofu has mold on it. And I really like this last line. Nothing could be worse than to complain too much or too little. Nothing could be worse than to complain too much or too little.
Complain about
of something or of inferior quality. So I guess a little is okay. But not too much. Okay. Damshi, do you want to continue? Just next.
Both day and night allow all things to come into and reside within your mind. Allow your mind, self, and all things to function together. Before midnight, direct your attention to organizing the following day's work. After midnight, begin preparation for the morning meal. After the morning meal, wash the pots and cook the rice and soup for the noon meal. When soaking the rice and measuring the water, the tenzo should be present at the sink.
Okay, let's pause there. Before midnight, direct your attention to organizing the following day's work. guess the Tenzo doesn't sleep much in a large monastery. Because usually you get up at 3 or 4 in the morning and start the day. But the line before that, allow all things to come into and reside within your mind. Allow your mind, yourself, and all things to function together as a whole. Here's kind of the heart of the text. In Japanese, there's a term, or at least in the Japanese Buddhism, called zenki, which means total functioning. Total functioning. It means kind of to receive without judgment and then make a decision about how to use it for the benefit of all beings. Receive without judgment and then how will you use it for the benefit of all beings? Allow everything to function together as a whole. In a way, I think Dogen is telling us that the subject and object, you and the things, come together. And working together gives life. Working with whatever you have been given is what it means to give life to something. Zenki. Then, morning meal, and the Tenzo is present at the sink. I'm not sure why the Tenzo needs to be there, but maybe just to keep an eye on things. Don't let any rice go down the drain. Ben, do you want to continue then?
Keep your eyes open. Do not allow even one grain of rice to be lost. Wash the rice thoroughly, put it in the pot, light the fire, and cook it. There is an old saying that goes, see the pot as your own head, see the water as your lifeblood.
Okay, one more, and just the next paragraph too, please.
Transfer the cooked rice into a bamboo basket in summer or a wooden container in winter, and then set it on the table. Cook the rice, soup, and any side dish all at the same time.
Great. Let's pause there. Of course, there's that famous saying, see the pot as your own head. See the water as your own lifeblood. Here, Dogen again stresses that connection and intimacy with all things. I think, you know, in our kind of experience today, we do feel this when we play a musical instrument, perhaps. You know, we train and we learn how to play it, and then, or maybe we're doing a painting or a drawing or a sculpture, and the tools and the materials just become part of who we are. Right? You're no longer kind of like, hey, this finger, then this finger, then it's just everything, you and the instrument become one. Or if you're drawing a painting and you're really into it, it's just you and what the paper. Your materials all coming together. But maybe Dogen's going a little bit further than just pointing out that intimacy that can arise when we're totally present. Maybe he's also telling us that we should really cherish these objects, the pot, the water, because without them, we wouldn't be alive. Without them, we wouldn't be able to really give full expression to our life. So whether it's a hoe, a guitar, a drum, become one with it. And then the bamboo basket in the summer, probably to cool the rice a little bit, to stop it from getting too hot and sweaty. And then the wooden bucket in winter to keep it warm. Okay, let's... Tim, next couple.
The Tenzo must be present. paying careful attention to the rice and soup while they are cooking. This is true whether the Tenzo has to work by himself or has assistance to the Tenzo, either with the cooking or the tending of the fires. Even though in the larger monasteries, recently people have been placed in charge of cooking the soup or the rice, the Tenzo should not forget that these people are assistants working under him and cannot be held responsible for this work. In olden times, the Tenzo was completely in charge. There were no such assistants.
Great. Let's just pause there for a minute. You know, these monasteries in China were often quite large, 1,000 people, sometimes 2,000, sometimes scattered over a large area, so the Tenzo had a lot to keep in mind. But this is really true. From my own experience of being Tenzo at our retreats, usually right after lunch I have a group of people come in to chop vegetables and things to prepare for the evening meal and for the next afternoon meal. And I cannot assume they know how to chop vegetables or do other jobs like measure out beans and rice and I can put them in the pot with the right amount of water. And it's not that they're incapable or they're lacking talent, but often they just don't know what to do. They've never had to do it. And so what I've come to see and learn from my experience as Tenzo, that if the kitchen is going to run smooth and the final outcome of the meal is going to turn out well, that comes from two things. One, from having kind of a clear vision of what's necessary, what needs to be done, and just doing it. Everything from selecting the ingredients, you know, just choosing the menu, how much was going to be served. But also making sure that whoever is there also knows what their job is going to be and how they should do it. Just to give you a kind of concrete example, what I usually do when I have like sometimes five or six people in there chopping madly away, before they arrive, I've set up a cutting station for them. And they're with their vegetables, whatever they need to do, and I have already cut something to show them the size, the shape that I wanted. I have two bowls there, one for them to put the waste in, one for them to put the final chopped in. And that's the only way it works. Everything carefully kind of imagined, planned out, and then let it flow. Let's go on to the next page. Do you want to the next one?
When you prepare food, never view the ingredients from some commonly held perspective, nor think about them only with your emotions. Maintain an attitude that tries to build great temples from ordinary greens, that expands the Buddha Dharma through the most trivial activity. When making a soup with ordinary greens, do not be carried away by feelings of dislike towards them, nor regard them lightly. Neither jump for joy simply because you have been given ingredients of superior quality to make a special dish. By the same token that you do not indulge in a meal because of its particularly good taste, there is no reason to feel an aversion towards an ordinary one. Do not be negligent and careless just because the materials seem plain, and hesitate to work more diligently with materials of superior quality. Your attitude towards things should not be contingent upon their quality. A person who is influenced by the quality of a thing, or who changes his speech or manner according to the appearance or position of the people he meets, is not a man working in the way.
Dogen is pretty clear here. I love that expression. Maintain an attitude that tries to build great temples from ordinary greens. Isn't that a lovely expression? So Dogen says, you know, use our mindfulness and become aware of the conditions of the world around us. Aware, but not caught up in our likes and dislikes. He's not saying you shouldn't have likes and dislikes. Of course we will. Right? Coconut ice cream. Yum. But not to get caught up in them. Not to allow them to get in the way of what needs to be done. Not allow them to shape what our actions are going to be. Acknowledging the present moment of our life, we let go of judgment. Ah, this is my life at this moment. Now what? How do I move forward with this in this situation? I feel that Dogen here tells us to go beyond just letting go of our habitual judgments, but to go further and become really intimate with what is right before us. A kind of discrimination, which is necessary, but without preferences. If that makes sense. Discrimination without preferences. Sometimes my students complain that I give them too much homework, or the homework wasn't fair, or the marking on the test was wrong. And I must say that even now, after all these years, I still feel like responding a little more forcefully than I usually do. But I can see their own caught-upness, and I can see my own caught-upness, not wanting the criticism. Yet, how do I go forward? How do I respond in that moment? Our life gives us these opportunities quite frequently. So let's do one more time. Sure.
Strengthen your resolve and devote your life spirit to surpassing the refinement of the ancient patriarchs and being even more meticulous than those who came before you. How do we apply our life aspiration to function in the way? If great teachers in the past were able to make a plain soup from greens for only a pittance, we must try to make a fine soup for the same amount. This is very difficult to do. Among other things, there are great differences between ages past and today. So even hoping to stand alongside the teachers of former times is no simple matter. Yet, being scrupulous in our actions and pouring our energy into these actions, there is no reason why we cannot equal the ancient masters. We must aspire to the highest of ideals without becoming arrogant in our manner.
Dogen gives us some encouragement. But I think he's also perhaps speaking to the people at that time. In Japan, there was the idea of called Mappo, which meant the last part of the cycle of when the world is destroyed and then a new Buddha appears in the world. And this idea of Mappo means that when the Buddha is born and teaches, it's a time when it's very easy to be awakened, to have enlightenment. And then it gradually gets a little harder and harder and harder after the Buddha dies. And then at the very end, the world seems to be falling into chaos. And it's the worst time to try practice. And in Japan, and also in China to a certain extent, the idea was it's impossible. The only thing you can do is rely on others. So we rely on some other outside spiritual force for help. Some form of a cosmic Buddha who could perhaps help when you die. But Dogen didn't agree with this. And he was saying, no, you too can stand on the shoulders of the ancient masters. Just devote yourself wholeheartedly to the way. Not easy, but with wholeheartedness, quite possible. And he gives us this encouragement. Let's just read one more paragraph, and then we'll stop.
These things are truly just a matter of course. Yet we remain unclear about them because our minds go racing about like horses running wild in the fields, while our emotions remain unmanageable, like monkeys swinging in the trees. If only we would step back to carefully reflect on the horse and monkey, our lives would be naturally become one with our work. Doing so is a means whereby we turn things even while simultaneously we are being turned by them. It is vital that we clarify and harmonize our lives with our work and not lose sight of either the absolute or the practical.
Yeah. So this is the heart of training, using work. We are turned by things as we turn them. When we bring an attitude to work and devote ourselves wholeheartedly to whatever we're doing, that also turns us. In the same way that Zazen turns us. Fully engaged in the work, something else happens that's very hard to notice. Through our efforts, our work goes smoothly, and the work smooths us out at the same time. This is what Zenki means, this total functioning. When we enter something wholeheartedly, it also enters us wholeheartedly. Smoothly, fully giving ourselves to work, the work fully gives itself to us. And in this way, we do not lose sight of either the absolute or the practical. Get that rice cooked, the meal served on time, and at the same time realizing everything is one. It all flows together like a stream. Okay, I think we'll stop here on the text. And I have a question, which I'll pose in a moment. Maybe we should bring in our tea and goodies. And we'll serve those, and then we'll just do our usual kind of just say our names, and then I'll pose the question, and then we'll talk about that together.
So it might take...